to offer you this lesson from Unity of the Keys Spiritual Center.
Good morning, everyone. How many of you are familiar with Ho'oponopono? Most of you. Okay, that's great. I've heard of this practice of Ho'oponopono for many years, but I didn't quite understand it even when I was initially learning about it in different speakers and reading about it, and I sort of put it in the back of my mind. Have you ever done something like that? Like, you know, I'll figure that out one day. But it was intriguing. So I'm going to tell you the story of... I'm there. Maybe you didn't want to hear the story, so I cut it off. I'm going to tell you the story of how Ho'oponopono became a much more widespread and known spiritual practice. And then we're going to talk about how to incorporate it into our whole spiritual practice. And then I'm going to tell you a very powerful story of healing about that happened in my life in the last 18 months. But first of all, Ho'oponopono, that word is defined as to correct, to make whole, or to make right. It's in a Hawaiian term. And this practice is an ancient Hawaiian spiritual practice. It's almost like a shamanic healing practice. And there are four parts to it. You basically deal with a situation by saying four statements. First of all, I'm sorry. Secondly, I love you, or forgive me, sorry. I am sorry. See, every talk gives me an opportunity to actually demonstrate whatever I'm talking about. It just happens that way. The universe is real kind. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I love you, and I thank you. Now, as Unity people, and as we heard from our speakers, I believe it was last week, sometimes it's difficult for us to say, I am sorry, because of the power of the words, I am. We understand that when we say, I am, that is what we are. And it has a tremendous power. And sometimes when I very first heard of the practice, that was my first reaction. I'm not going to make a powerful statement that I am sorry. Please forgive me. I'm cool with that. I love you, of course. And I thank you. But I am something like sorry. But what I have come to understand in this practice, when we are saying, I am sorry, we are surrendering to the human emotion that is part of our experience as divine beings. And once I began to think of it that way, I was much more able to incorporate this practice. And this whole practice is based on the concept that whatever we experience in life, whatever shows up in our lives, whether it's right here in our personal life or whether it's out there somewhere, but we hear about it or are affected by it, that we are responsible for drawing that into our lives. Now, I think that's a fairly common teaching in our spiritual principles. But this particular teaching takes it a little further. And what the concept is here is how we drew that in is based on the unhealed stories that are part of the collective consciousness, the thought errors that are part of the collective consciousness, sometimes very personal and just ours, but sometimes in a broader sense. And that collective consciousness we all have access to at a subconscious level. And this whole concept is based on healing those error thoughts or those unhealed stories, both for ourselves and for the collective consciousness. And one person who heals, one person, the power of this is if one person practices it enough to heal one error thought or one unhealed story, they have healed it for everybody, not just themselves. That is power. That's an amazing transformational power. And the concept of this, again, the story that brings it, brought it into prominence as a spiritual practice, is the story of a psychologist in Hawaii. He was hired by this asylum for the criminally insane. And this place had been in such disarray that they were going through a psychologist a month. They couldn't keep staff. There were 25 to 30 inmates, and they had to be shackled. They were violent. They attacked each other. They attacked the staff. It was a horrendous experience in that asylum. And it was very difficult to maintain staff. Well, he accepted the position. And when he went there, he would go to the asylum every day. But in the course of his entire time there, he never one time saw even one of the inmates. What he did every day was he had a file that had the pictures and the stories of every person who was incarcerated there. And he would focus on that person and that person's story and himself, and he would practice all day long Ho'oponopono. He would say and think and chant over and over and over, "I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. And I thank you." And in the course of about 18 months, almost every single one of those inmates was significantly healed. Their behaviors became tremendously improved to where they could go out on bus trips. There were a number of them who were actually released because they had reached that level of functionality. And he never one time met with any of those inmates. Again, the concept of healing the story, of healing the error thoughts. And when he healed them in himself, he healed them for the collective consciousness. That's some pretty powerful stuff, yeah? Pretty powerful stuff. And that is what this whole practice is based on. But now, we live in a world where we do have all these human experiences. And I don't know about you, but you know that song today, "Some Days I Will and Some Days I Won't." Guess what? Some days I can and some days I can't. Some days I do and some days I don't. You know, adapting this spiritual practice, even knowing how powerful it is, requires a discipline and a commitment that to rise above, or I don't like the word above, that implies it's a negative, to rise beyond our human experience and to tap into our divinity. But you know what? We get kind of hung up. We get kind of hung up on that. And we, you know, some days when something, I own a company, I have a couple hundred employees, and there are days where I should be practicing this every single solitary moment. I'm sitting there fuming. It's like, how could that person do that? Or how could that have happened? How could someone have allowed that to happen? And guess what's happening? I'm getting more upset by the moment. Now, I work remotely, so that person working in Jackson, Mississippi, or Cincinnati, Ohio, they don't have a clue what's going on. So I'm not affecting them. I'm just getting myself all wound up. And how effective am I even in my human capacity as a boss? Not so much, huh? So the beauty of this practice is its power. The challenge of this practice is the discipline it takes. And the hard part is knowing, to whom do I say I'm sorry? To whom do I say I love you? To whom do I say please forgive me? To whom do I say thank you? Now, those are some pretty powerful things. Come on, the power of love, the power of gratitude, the power of forgiveness, each one of those powers all by itself is phenomenal when we engage it. To engage it all, but how do we direct it? And I became thoroughly immersed in learning how to effectively use this in the last 18 months for a pretty powerful reason I'm going to share with you very shortly. But what I came to understand in all my readings, you can direct all of that to your higher self. Because you can say, I'm sorry. And what you're saying to your higher self is, I surrender to that human emotion that I'm sorry. I am sorry that this situation exists. Even if I didn't consciously bring it into my life, whatever part I had, I'm sorry. Say it to your higher self. And then say, I love you. Now, we can tell our higher self we love them. Can we not do that? We don't have to direct the I love you part to the, quote, culprit. We can say, please forgive me, to our higher self. We are asking for that forgiveness for ourselves. And we can say, I thank you for the forgiveness we know is automatically granted as long as we accept it. It's there for our acceptance. Once again, pretty powerful. And this relates, you know, in the book, Love is Letting Go of Fear, and thank you, Mary Ellen, for turning me onto this book about a month ago. I'm always looking for new spiritual literature. And this book isn't new. I've known about it, but I never read it. And when I was searching, Mary Ellen picked it up and said, have you read this one? And I said, no. So I took it and read it. And this is by Gerald Jampolsky. And it's Love is Letting Go of Fear. And in this, I think he taps in to the reason that we seek any spiritual idea or spiritual path. It is because at some level, our single goal is peace of mind. Because when we have peace of mind, we have everything. We have love, we have light, we have abundance. We have friendships, we have health, because we are at peace. And as Gerald says, with peace of mind as being our single goal, the first step is to focus on self-fullness, not selfishness. And through that, forgiveness is the process. And he goes on to say, many of us become frustrated when we make the mistake of trying to love others as the first step before we deal with ourselves. Because, like, when we're upset because someone's done somebody wrong, and that somebody they did wrong is me, when we're upset about that, we don't feel a whole lot of love towards that other person. And if we start out, okay, my practice says I got to get this love down. If we start out, we can't get there from here. We have to start out with ourselves. We have to start right here in the center of our being. And then, if we forgive ourselves, if we love ourselves, we get our higher self. We engage our higher self in the practice of helping us reconnect with ourselves and helping us express our love to ourselves and our gratitude to ourselves. Then we can move on and deal with the situation. But we can't get here from there. We can't make that quantum leap to the other side when we're stuck in our anger and frustration. We have to heal ourselves first, at least around that issue, or start the process. And that really, when I read that whole, I was reading that whole chapter in here, and I thought, my God, that is the source so many times of my frustration, is I know, okay, I am really upset about something. Do I really let this person know how I'm upset about this? Or do I try and find a space to come from love? But I can't come from love towards them until I'm living in love with me. That was the key to helping me really totally put the last few pieces of this practice together. And you can use it at the drop of a pin. You can say, I had this whole week in preparing for this talk, every time any little thing came up, I said the mantra, if you would, of those four statements three times. And before I got through even the second time of saying it, I was already calmer. By the time I got through the third one, it's a little bit more calmer. And if I still was a little rough around the edges, I did it three more times. Because, you know, sometimes one treatment isn't just enough, you know? You gotta go back for more. And that's allowed. You're allowed to take care of yourself like that. You're not only allowed, that's what you want to do. We love you. And now, with your prayers or your prayer energy, I'm going to share a very powerful healing of engaging this practice. Now, before I do, I want to say this. I was able to use this with this big, gigantic issue. But yet, even as powerfully as it healed me around that, I still am struggling with the discipline to use it every day in every situation. But think, what if I can make that? Just think about that. That's crazy. Well, how do they do that now? Boom, booyah. I get the booyah part. So I am going to tell you this story. In 2016, in my Cincinnati location, I brought back into the company someone that had been gone for about 5 years. Her name was Tracy. And she had worked for me for quite a while, and her sister had worked for me. And my husband and my son had both been in the business, and my husband had hired Tracy in the early 2000s when she first came with us, and my son had hired her sister when he came on board I don't know, sometime in the later 2007, I think. Well, in 2016, Tracy came back to work for me, and I was so excited because she was coming in to run my Cincinnati operation. And Tracy is this person of light and energy and very much into her spirituality. And it was thrilling to me to welcome her back in the company. And she came back in July of that year. In September of that year, it was September 11th, I was actually in Illinois because my son's, there was a death in my son's in-law family of a fairly young man, his wife's uncle, that we knew and socialized with, and very sudden accidental death. And I was there for a celebration of life for him, but being with the family. And it was beautiful because he was into the rockabilly community. I don't know if you know what that is. It's like great fun music. And we were at their house. The whole rockabilly community showed up, did great music, great tributes to him. It was a feel-good day to celebrate someone's life who had, you know, made their transition very unexpectedly at a very young age. It was a beautiful day. My son, of course, was there. Well, it's towards the end of the day, and I'm getting ready to go back. My son and his wife live in the Illinois area. My corporate office is there. And I was getting ready to go back to the house and take my grandchildren with me because they had been there all day long. It was time they were ready to go. But I wanted to go in the house and say goodbye to Jill, that's the wife of the gentleman who died, and to her daughters. And I was in there talking to them. And my phone had been turned off all day long and in my purse in the house. Well, all of a sudden, Jason, that's my son, he comes to the back door. And he said, "Mom, come out here." And I said, "Jay, I'll be out in a few minutes." He goes, "No, Mom, come right now." I immediately knew something wasn't right. So they had a good-sized yard and a good-sized deck. He took me to the end of the deck, away from the house and away from the other people, and he handed me his phone. And it was Tracy's sister, Nikki. Now, you know in stories when you read that when someone hears something, all they hear after that is just a roar in their head. Nikki had to tell me that Tracy's ex-husband had just brutally murdered her and committed suicide himself just 2 hours before that. I could not do anything but scream. And I heard screaming, I didn't even know it was me. And for several months, I woke up every single night. I can't tell you how many times my husband sat there and held me for hours. It was impossible for me. And I was in Cleveland, I'm up there in the summer, and I was meeting with one of my Unity friends, and she had heard about this, and she could tell I still was not right. And she's the one who reminded me of Ho'oponopono. I began to practice it that very day. And it is the reason I can stand up here and tell you the story without totally dissembling. That's how powerful a healing process. I can even talk about and see her ex-husband as his actions, as Gerald Topolsky says, they're a desperate cry for love. They're born out of fear and anguish. I can actually see that. I can say that, and I can mean that. Impossible. I thought I could never, ever hear his name again. And I know her whole family. I know her dad and her sisters. I knew her children. They were born when she, after she came to work for us. But my husband and son obviously knew. This was not just an employee. This was someone totally important in our lives. And I can now, I just talked to Nikki, Tracy's sister, the other day, and I taught her this practice. And she isn't even in, she isn't in Unity or anything else, but we were talking, we were laughing, and we were able to really laugh about Tracy and have great memories. We were talking about how great her kids are doing. This was just 2 weeks ago. Well, I can do that, and I can talk about Tracy and see her light. Because of Ho'oponopono. So I invite you to incorporate it in your spiritual practice, because it changed my life. And I have great plans for it to change my life even more. Thank you. Namaste.